You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. If you've ever felt like the news was stressing you out and you couldn't take it anymore, you're not alone. A new report from the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism finds that 41% of Americans often or sometimes avoid the news. That number has gone up in recent years. While people often talk about a lack of trust in the media, the number one reason for avoiding the news, according to the survey, was stress and mental well-being. Joshua Benton joins us now to talk more about news avoidance and what it means for the media, for media consumers, and the health of our democracy. He's founder and director of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard University. Joshua, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
Well, we see this survey, other research out there on news avoidance. Is this something new? Is this new news that we're avoiding the news?
It's certainly not a new behavior entirely. Obviously, some people have always been more or less checked out from the news. I do think the one thing that is fundamentally new is that as we've transitioned from a primarily mass media transmission of news, you know, broadcast television, broadcast radio, a daily print newspaper, once you shift that to first the internet and then smartphones, people just have a wildly greater number of choices of what to consume at any given moment. So you had some people who were consuming news under that old broadcast model, not necessarily because they wanted to seek it out, but because they didn't have that many other choices. If you wanted to, you know, watch television at 6 o'clock at night when I was a kid, you were watching the news. That was the only thing on. Now people have an infinite array of distractions available on their phone, and that means that people who are loosely attached to it are increasingly detaching themselves from the news.
Let's get into this idea that the news is stressing us out. You wrote about this and you wrote about comments on this study. And we heard on our own Facebook page, the Ideas Network Facebook page. For example, Janice says, "For peace of mind, I must remove myself from the news occasionally or I will get sick," Janice writes. Joshua, is that something we're hearing a lot, that we're worried about the effect that too much news is going to have on our health?
I think that's true. You know, one thing that the New York Times slogan, "All the news that's fit to print," for a long time that created the illusion that there was sort of a defined set amount of news and you could get to the end of it, you know, in one sitting. Now that the internet is borderless and boundaryless, the news is always around us. And I think that has increased the degree to which some people view it as with a feeling of being overwhelmed. You know, beyond that, I think that, frankly, the political moment, whatever one's politics, the rise of populist approaches and the rise of someone like Donald Trump and the environment that he brings has led a lot of people to, on one hand, be incredibly engaged with the news. You saw a big increase in news consumption during the 2016 campaign and after the election and in the early days of the Trump candidacy. But you also see some people saying, you know what, there's just too much of it. I've got other things to do and I need to, you know, practice some form of self-care and not get too engaged in the latest turns of the screw at the White House.
You mentioned the older style of news being on a schedule. It's the TV news at whatever time, or news on the sixes on commercial radio, or I'm going to read the newspaper in the morning or afternoon whenever I read it. Now, is it something different for our mental health? Do you think that we don't have that set news time?
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe difficult for some listeners to remember what it was like before the internet. You know, more and more people come along every day who have no memory of that time. But, you know, if I wanted news during the day when I was growing up, there were only like two slots in the day that it was really available to me. And no matter how much I wanted to know what was going on at 2 p.m. in the afternoon, I couldn't, right? And now that we get a lot of our news through push notifications and things that are, you know, an email alert that shows up in our inbox, there is a sense that news is coming after us and it's chasing us in a sense. And I think there's some people, you know, and I'll admit I'm one of these people, most journalists are. Some of us love this sort of environment. We love consuming news. We find it fascinating. We want to dive into it. I bet a lot of your listeners fall into that category. But there's some people for whom that's the exact opposite of what they want.
Some comments out there, and you talk about this in the piece I mentioned that you wrote, feel a sense of powerlessness. There's so much bad stuff going on. There's this fire hose of news, and it feels like we can't do anything about it. Is that a common theme you run across?
Yeah, that's one thing that a lot of people have been trying to address. When you have the old mass media model, one newspaper in most cities, their goal was to be sort of inoffensive. If you're the only paper in town, it doesn't help you to anger certain slices of your audience. And the result was you got a generally moderated view of what was going on at any given time. Whereas when you switch to digital, you have an incentive to try and get clicks. You have a push towards triggering people's emotions. Social media, which is an increasing source of traffic for news organizations, really relies on these emotional buttons being pushed. And that entire environment, I think, combines to the sort of situation that we're in now.
Talking to Joshua Benton from the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard University, talking about news avoidance, what leads people to turn away from the news all the time or part of the time. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you ever hit a point in your life where it feels like there's just too much news, maybe too much bad news, and for your own mental health, you need to steer clear? What do you do? Call 800-642-1234. Joshua, for members of the mainstream media, however you want to define that, are there lessons here about what they cover and how they cover it?
I think so. One that I try and push on people is we as journalists have typically assumed that the move to digital journalism has meant that things have to speed up. Right. That essentially a newspaper went from publishing once a day to publishing throughout the day. We take on some of the characteristics of wire services and of 24-hour broadcasting. And I think there's one lesson from this is that that is going to please a certain segment of the market, but it's going to not do the opposite for perhaps a larger segment of the market. There are people for whom a weekly digital news product might be exactly what they want, who don't want to feel the obligation to be plugged in 24/7. And I think there are opportunities for publishers and for journalists to try and figure out different ways to create these sorts of products. If you look at the kinds of news formats that have really thrived in recent years, two of them are email newsletters and podcasts. And what do those have in common? They're both things that are delivered on a schedule, but you can sort of consume them at any given time. You can read the email an hour later or 2 hours later. You can listen to the podcast on the weekend when you have more time. They're also something that can be completed. Eventually, you get to the end of the email newsletter. Eventually, you get to the end of the podcast. There's a sense that it is a state of news that you enter and then have sort of permission to step away from. I think when you compare that to the endless stream of content on your Facebook news feed or on your Twitter feed or the endless array of headlines that any news site is going to keep shoving at you, I think there's a lesson that smaller, more contained experiences can do a better job of reaching people where they want to be.
Now, talking about that feeling of powerlessness and being overwhelmed that people might have, you also touch on in your piece the idea of solutions-based journalism. What is that? What does that look like?
Sure. Solutions journalism is a term that a lot of people have been using in the last 5 or 6 years, specifically around the idea that journalism that identifies problems but then offers nothing for the reader or the consumer to act on those problems is not a particularly satisfying model, right? If you are a news organization that does a tremendous investigation into problems in your local schools, that's fine. That's wonderful. That's good, important work. But if you are a reader and you come to the end of it, you don't have any idea about how to fix these problems. It's not the kind of emotional state that is frankly going to make you want to make those people come back and read more news the next day. So the idea behind solutions journalism is whenever you present identify a problem in your community, you also need to take the next step of not being prescriptive, not being activist and saying, and this is why we need to increase funding for X, by 20%, but to outline what are some communities that have faced similar problems and how have they tried to address it? What are the things that the experts say are potential paths forward that might be available to local leaders and voters to push for? The idea that news in its previous model encouraged this feeling of powerlessness and that solutions being involved in the presentation and the ideation of solutions might help close that gap.
We heard from Andrea on Facebook who says, I'm not done with news, but I have unsubscribed from quite a few sources because I think newsrooms are not intentionally lazy, just understaffed, underpaid, overworked, and inexperienced in general. How would you respond to a news consumer who says that, Joshua?
Well, I think that I don't know if what kinds of news organizations she might be talking about, but I do think that there is a large and growing divide between local and national news on that front. Essentially, for a variety of business model reasons, local newspapers have been hit extremely hard by the transition to digital. National newspapers, the New York Times, the Washington Post, they're doing great. National digital news sites are doing a lot of interesting things, but there just isn't the same financial incentive to create local news. And one of the things that has been clear in the research for a long time and also just sort of makes sense is that local news is the kind of news that people connect to the most directly. Local news is much less ideologically driven than national news. You know, if you watch CNN or MSNBC or Fox News, you're going to see a war between two sides that is being fought every day, every hour, every minute. Whereas, you know, whether there are potholes in the road and whether the mayor's done anything to fix them, that's something that isn't inherently a Republican or Democratic issue. People identify with local news reporters. They know that they live in their community, that their kids go to the same schools that your kids do. They identify them. They might have seen their byline over a lengthy period of time. There's a huge amount of trust and closeness baked into local media. So this transition to digital has essentially hollowed out the part of the media ecosystem that encouraged that trust, led to the loss of a lot of jobs for a lot of really talented reporters and editors. But it's encouraged this national level that is firing on all cylinders all the time and wants to portray everything as a conflict between good and evil. And that, I think, is a recipe for the kind of loss of trust and desire of people to step away that we've seen.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Joshua Benton of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard University. We're talking about why many Americans avoid the news and what news organizations can do about it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you find yourself tuning out the news sometimes, all the times, why do you do it? How could news organizations serve you better? Do you think limited news exposure is actually a pretty good idea? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jack is with us in Madison. Jack, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Jack?
So I just had a thought about following the news right now. Now, you probably wouldn't hear anyone else bring this up on WPR, but thinking about the role the news media plays in this day and age, especially given how biased everything is, how slanted it is to one side or the other, it made me think of a line from Ozzy Osbourne's Crazy Train from the second verse where he says, "When person conditioned to rule and control, the media sells it and you live the role." So as part of my first question, I wondered if you thought that was a generally valid statement and that explains why a lot of people are avoiding the news today.
Jack, thanks for the call. So people skeptical of the corporate owners of media. What do you think, Joshua?
Well, if my memory serves, Crazy Train came out in 1980, which was very much an era of the old mass media structures. You know, at that time, you know, in the 70s and early 80s, media trust was at a very high level. You know, I do think that that there have always been legitimate concerns about corporate ownership and things like that. I take that. I do think, though, that it's perhaps overstated compared to other things that cause news organizations to do unfortunate things. If you look particularly at the newspaper world, the largest newspapers in America are very they're not clustered around just one or two companies, as some people sometimes say. Of the 20 largest newspapers in the United States, they have 17 different owners. So I think corporate consolidation is a legitimate concern. I think we're going to see, frankly, a lot more of it, and that does start to become threatening at some level, I think. But I rank that relatively low on the list of causes.
Jack, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go to Kathy now in Wisconsin Rapids. Kathy, hi.
Hi.
What do you think, Kathy?
I was one of those that during the election, it consumed me and it got me worked up. I would get really frustrated. And I used to get ready in the morning, listen to Good Morning America, shut that off. I just stopped watching world news as much as possible, but still watch local. But I flipped on Relevant Radio, a Christian radio station in the morning, and I am at so much more peace when I leave for work. But I just feel like I had to do that to realize that things aren't as bad as the media makes things out to be. I think, you know, it was so gloom and doom and felt like the world was ending, and it really isn't.
Kathy, thanks for the call. Oh, I wanted to make sure you mentioned the election, the 2016 election.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks a lot for the call, Kathy. Kathy gives us a lot to talk about there. I think, Joshua, first of all, that 2016 election as a turning point for a lot of people when it came to media news saturation.
Yeah, I think, you know, every new presidential election gets branded as, you know, the Twitter election, the Facebook election. The media has changed so much. Just thinking back to Barack Obama's first election 11 years ago, that's a very different internet then. I do think that the 2016 election, both because of media technological evolution and because of the particular candidates, did feel all-consuming in a way that wasn't quite the case in, you know, Obama versus Romney or Obama versus McCain or earlier elections. And I do think that a lot of people who had strong partisan identities really shifted their media diets around that time. You do see that the vast majority of media consumption in the United States is still in relatively non-ideological spaces. It's not, you know, explicitly liberal or explicitly conservative news sites. But for the people who do want to consume that, they often consume it with an incredible intensity. There was a new study that just came out today from the Knight Foundation that looked at young people and their news consumption habits, young adults. And it found that young people who had a strong party identity, who felt that they were strongly Republican or strongly Democratic, they 32% of them are getting news stories via social media multiple times every single day. For people who are less partisan in that same group, who are independent or have a weak connection to the parties, it's only 18%. So we do see this phenomenon where when you charge people up ideologically, they get some reward from consuming ideologically aligned news and information. And that means there's a market that that people would like to sell news to. And there's a certain element of a vicious circle there. One thing I'll just say about this is that you see some of these broader trends across, say, countries in Europe and elsewhere. One thing that really does make us different in the United States is that for all the good work that folks like you and people at NPR stations and PBS stations do, we don't have a BBC. We don't have this incredible, you know, bedrock institution that's sort of at the center of the news ecosystem that is broadly trusted, that is, you know, generally considered to be not towing a specific ideological line. NPR and PBS do great work, but they're much smaller. And that is the sort of institution that would really be beneficial at this point. Some sort of, you know, people say that they have high trust levels for NPR and PBS, the two highest of any news organizations in America, but they just don't have the funding to perform that sort of centering role.
Something else that Kathy mentioned, that she felt that so much of the news was relentlessly negative. And that's something that you saw in a lot of comments out there attached to the surveys we've been talking about. Is that part of what you think is leading people to avoid the news more and more?
I think that's certainly true. I mean, that is something that has been true for a very long time, right? You know, there are lots of old cliches around it. You know, man bites dog is not a story, but dog bites man is not a story, but man bites dog is. News organizations and reporters look for the unusual, for the aberrant. That's what makes it news. So it has always been the case that looking for things that violate norms, that is something that news organizations tend to cover more. I do think that one extra factor in here is that we increasingly have a lot of media that paints any particular complicated issue in very black and white terms. You know, if you watch certain cable news shows, you'll get the impression that there's one group of people who is the absolute enemy of all that is good in the universe, and another group that is violently defending all that is good in the universe. That sort of painting everything in that stark conflict-driven terms, that is something that I think increases the impression of negativity. One thing that is unfortunately something that has been very well shown, both through cable news and through what works on social media, is that anger is an incredible motivating factor for people to consume information. People will click on things if it makes them angry. And there are some news organizations and journalists who are taking advantage of that.
Is there a way in our last minute or so to get around that, to de-angrify our news market, our news diet?
I mean, I'll be honest, there are a whole host of factors at work here, and they generally all seem to be pointing in the same sort of direction. There is one trend I'll mention in our last minute, which is that we have seen a broad shift away from news organizations relying on advertising for revenue and moving towards relying on subscriptions, revenue directly from readers or consumers. There are a lot of good things about that shift. Reader revenue is a lot more reliable. Advertising money has all been taken away by Facebook and Google anyway. But one of the potential negative things is that it means that there's going to be a high quality news that is going to be increasingly available for a group of people who are unusually interested in news, unusually have unusual amounts of time to invest in consuming news. These are people who are more educated than average, who have higher incomes than average. They also tend to be more liberal than average. We run the risk of creating this sort of subscription wall between the quality news that is paid for by people who can afford it and have the interest, and a broad mess of whatever shows up on your Facebook news feed that is free, is driven by, you know, clickbait and the desire to get ad impressions, and I think would probably reinforce a lot of the negative behaviors that we've been talking about.
Joshua, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Joshua Benton, founder and director of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard University. He joined us to talk about why many Americans are avoiding the news and what the media can do about it. Still time for you to share your thoughts over at the Ideas Network Facebook page.